You know how sometimes you think a problem is solved and then wham, it pops right back up, maybe even stronger.
Yeah, happens all the time.
Well, imagine that, but in the world of sophisticated cybercrime. Today we're going to dig into the fascinating and honestly a bit unsettling story of the Luma info stealer.
Ah yes, Luma. That's malware designed specifically to grab things like passwords, credit card details, you know, all that sensitive stuff.
Exactly. And they just staged this remarkable comeback after law enforcement tried to shut them down big time. So we're really exploring resilience, adaptation, and, well, this constant cat and mouse game in cybersecurity.
It really is. And today we'll unpack what actually happened during that big takedown attempt back in May 2025. We'll look at how Luma bounced back so fast and what that tells us about where cyber threats are heading.
Right.
We'll pull out the key insights from the material we've looked at, give you a really comprehensive picture, and probably most importantly, talk about what you can actually do to protect yourself.
Okay, let's start with what looked like a huge win. May 2025, international law enforcement agencies, they launched this pretty major operation against Luma.
Right. It was coordinated.
Yeah. Huge scale. They seized something like, 2,300 domains? And big parts of Luma's operational setup. It really seemed like a substantial blow at the time.
It looked that way, definitely. A big success on the surface.
But not so permanent.
No, that's the fascinating part. The disruption was, temporary. It definitely caused problems for them, no doubt. But it didn't actually shut them down.
How do we know that?
Well, almost immediately, the Luma operators were active on cybercriminal forums. They basically acknowledged the takedown, admitted they got hit.
Wow, okay.
But they also reassured everyone that their core server infrastructure, the really important stuff, hadn't been seized. They admitted some data got wiped remotely, but the core was safe.
Their core infrastructure, so the brains of the operation.
Pretty much, yeah. It suggests maybe a decentralized setup or just really good planning for this kind of event. They kept the command and control safe.
Which shows, I guess, some serious planning, right? Like business continuity, but for criminals.
Exactly. Highly unusual and, frankly, quite sophisticated for a criminal group.
So they didn't just survive. They actually, came back strong. Researchers started seeing signs of recovery really fast, didn't they?
Oh, yeah. Within weeks, clear indicators were popping up. They just seemed to launch straight into rebuilding, restoring their capabilities systematically.
Within weeks? How on earth do they manage that? Is it just like technical skill or money?
It's likely a mix. Definitely technical skill, but also sophisticated organization, probably pre-planned steps, and significant financial resources backing them. Mm-hmm. This isn't just a few hackers in a basement.
Right. It's a business.
It's a well-oiled machine.
Hmm.
And analysis now shows they're pretty much back to where they were before the takedown. Malicious traffic linked to Luma has surged dramatically.
Which means
they've rebuilt the tech, and crucially, they've regained trust in the cyber criminal underworld. They're back facilitating info stealing like before.
That's sobering. So, okay, the big question then is how? What did they actually change? What were the strategic moves?
Well, a key part was shifting their infrastructure. They still use legitimate cloud services. That's a common tactic to hide their traffic, blend in.
Makes sense.
But they moved away from the providers that got hit in the takedown. Specifically, they seem to have shifted away from Cloudflare and are now favoring other hosting with a notable focus on Russian-based services like Selectl.
Russian-based services. Why theirs? That's significant.
Oh, absolutely. Moving operations to jurisdictions that are, let's say, less cooperative with international law enforcement or where legal processes are just slower makes them much harder to disrupt again.
Right. It buys them protection, basically.
Exactly. It's a calculated move to make their core operations more resilient against future takedowns.
Okay. So that's the back-end infrastructure. But what about how they're actually getting the malware onto victims' machines? That's changed too, right? I read they're using four main ways now.
Yes. And this is really critical for defense, understanding these vectors. One big method now is fraudulent software cracks and keygens. Fake activators for paid software.
Yeah, classic lure.
They promote these using manipulated ads, messing with search results. If you click, you land on these deceptive websites. And here's the clever bit. These sites use something called traffic detection systems, or TDS.
TDS, what's that do?
It essentially fingerprints your system before it delivers anything malicious. It checks your browser, your operating system, maybe even looks for signs you're a security researcher.
So they only infect good targets.
Pretty much. It makes their attacks way more efficient. They don't waste their valuable malware payloads on systems that aren't vulnerable or on researchers trying to analyze them.
Right.
Much harder to track, too.
Sneaky. Okay, what's method number two?
Next up are these things called click-fix social engineering attacks. Basically, they compromise legitimate websites first.
Okay.
Then they make these sites display fake KPTCA pages, you know, the prove you're human boxes.
Right.
But these are traps. They trick you into copying and running PowerShell commands, supposedly to verify yourself. But what it actually does is load Luma directly into your computer's memory.
Into memory. So no file gets saved on hard drive.
Exactly. It's what we call a fileless attack. And that's a real headache for traditional antivirus software, because there's no malicious file to scan. It just runs in memory.
Wow. Okay. That sounds tough to catch. What else? You mentioned GitHub.
Yeah, using GitHub. It seems weird, right? Using a legit platform for developers.
It does seem counterintuitive.
But it works because people trust GitHub. Attackers create these fake repositories, often using AI to generate plausible-looking descriptions, advertising things like game cheats or software mods.
Ah, targeting gamers or people looking for shortcuts.
Precisely. And hidden in there are the Luma payloads, maybe disguised as an installer like tempspoofer.exe or hacked inside zip files. They leverage GitHub's reputation.
Okay, that's three. What's the fourth?
And the fourth one, building on these, is heavy use of social media platforms.
Social media, like Facebook and YouTube.
Exactly those. We're seeing campaigns using YouTube videos, Facebook posts, all promoting cracked software. These posts then link out to external websites hosting Luma.
And I bet those websites look convincing.
Sometimes they even use trusted services like sites.google.com to build the landing pages, making them seem even more credible. It really makes you wonder, you know, how many people might just stumble across these lures every day without realizing the danger.
It really does. It feels like we're always playing catch-up. So Luma's comeback, it really highlights the challenges, doesn't it? You mentioned their resilience, their resources, this almost corporate-level planning. Why are these info-stealer things so profitable anyway, enough to fund this kind of bounce back?
It really comes down to the value of the data they steal. Think about it. Banking logins, crypto wallet keys, personal info for identity theft, even logins for corporate networks.
All highly valuable on the dark web, I imagine.
Extremely valuable. There's a huge market for it. Other criminals buy it for all sorts of fraud and attacks. And for someone using Luma, maybe as an affiliate in their malware as a service model, the cost to get started is relatively low compared to the potential payout from selling that stolen data.
So the profit margins are huge.
Massive. And that creates this powerful incentive for the operators to invest heavily in being resilient, in having recovery plans, because they know they can make the investment back very quickly. It suggests just taking down infrastructure without arresting the people or hitting the profits might not be enough long term.
That's a really critical point. So if law enforcement action alone isn't the silver bullet, what does this mean for, well, for you listening, for organizations trying to defend themselves? What defensive measures actually work against these tactics?
It means we absolutely have to adapt our cybersecurity thinking. Given Luma's use of memory-based attacks, for instance, you need advanced threat detection that can specifically spot that kind of activity, not just look for bad files.
Right, going beyond basic antivirus.
Definitely. And robust endpoint protection is key strategies that look at behavior, not just signatures. Things like behavioral analysis tools, application whitelisting to control what can run.
Makes sense. What else?
And honestly, a huge piece is employee education. Training people to recognize these sophisticated tricks, the fake cracks, the manipulated social media posts, those deceptive KPCHA pages. It sounds basic. But regular security awareness training makes a massive difference in stopping infections before they start.
So the human element is still critical.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And then, of course, having a solid incident response plan. Knowing exactly what to do if you do get hit, how to contain it fast, assess the damage, restore systems, preserve evidence.
And what about being proactive? Things to do before an attack?
Yeah, proactive is always better. Regular security checkups, penetration testing to find weaknesses before the bad guys do. Continuous monitoring of your network for anything suspicious. In real time.
And the basics, I assume. Updates, backups.
Oh, absolutely foundational. Keep everything patched, configure systems properly, and have good tested backups. That can be the difference between a minor incident and a catastrophe.
It's really clear that these cyber criminal groups just see takedowns as, well, obstacles to overcome, not game over. It forces us to constantly adapt defense and likely requires much stronger international cooperation.
Definitely. This whole Luma situation, their impressive recovery, the sophisticated ways they're operating now, it really just lays bare how fast these threats evolve and how adaptable and well-resourced these criminal enterprises are now.
So thinking about Luma's rapid return and that clear profit motive you talked about, what does this case really tell us about how effective these disrupt and dismantle operations truly are if they don't lead to arrests or real legal consequences for the main players? What might that mean for how we fight cybercrime going forward?
And now that you have this detailed picture of how these modern threats work, maybe take a moment to think about your own digital security. Are there elements, perhaps, that need a closer look, especially knowing how advanced and persistent these attackers can be?